Bhagavad Gita analyzes the problem that we all face in life. It is a science useful for every human being, irrespective of the region that the person is born in, the various cultural backgrounds from which the person is coming up, may be speaking various different languages, all irrespective of all these adjuncts, can derive the benefit from Bhagavad Gita in realizing the ultimate goal that we all are seeking. And the secret is simple. To learn to live life based on reality rather than based on appearances. The problem that we saw in the life of Arjuna, the problem of tremendous confusion, frustration, terrible depression, and the suffering that all was seen there on the battlefield. We are like that on the battlefield. And all of us come to this situation sometimes or other and feel this sense of helplessness, frustration, and purposelessness in life. What is this life for? We choose sometimes this purpose or that purpose, but then it is over soon, and then we are again faced with the same dilemma. Sri Krishna diagnoses this problem and sees that the life that is based on appearances cannot really meet any better fate. The solution is therefore learn to live the life based on what is real. Last Friday, we were discussing that beautiful verse that the bodies are appearances and therefore are subject to destruction. But the dweller of the body is not subject to destruction. The dweller is permanent. The dweller of the body is different from the appearance of body. The bodies, as we all know, they come and go. Here it is very important to feel this fact that the bodies are called perishable. In this verse it is said that dehi nityam avadhyoyam, and these bodies, they come and go, they die. So the one dweller in the body, and then how is this body? That the bodies, they perish. The great Shankaracharya has explained that what is the meaning of perishable here. Perishable word is used in two different sense. Like if you have this idea that and the fruits and vegetables and such things are perishable goods. If you make, we had some soup made some time back on some Sunday, and after 3, 4, 5 days, not too many people came on that Sunday, so it remained. And after 4, 5 days, it was there, still sitting in the refrigerator and all, but was not edible anymore. It was, in that sense, it is perishable. The bodies are not meant to be perishable in this sense here. They are perishable in this sense, but what is indicated here, what is told here is much different, more different than that. Much more is told when it is said that the bodies are perishable. They are appearances. They are not real at all. They are perishable like the snake appearing on a rope. When you examine, the snake goes away. It is like the water of the mirage that appears. When you examine, it goes away. The first idea of perishable, yes, it is there for some days and goes away. May tell Triveni that, okay, so some days it is there, so for some time I can enjoy it, and then it is, when it is going to go away, let it go away. But while it is there, let me enjoy. Let us make hay while the sun shines. So, it is this idea may erupt in mind. That okay, it may be perishable, we all know, we people die, but we live for some time, is it not? So let us enjoy while we are living. The bodies are as if the bodies are real for some time. They are not real at all. They are appearances. The appearance and reality, that distinction we must consciously learn to make in our life and base the life on real and not on appearances. Vedanta, you will see everywhere, makes this clear-cut distinction. Appearance, if we run after appearance, think that the appearances are real, then the life is tied to the appearances. And thus, well, what result can be expected but suffering, frustrations? But if the life is based on reality, that which is real, if we are seeking the rope that appeared as snake, we will get the rope. But if we run after the snake, it is not going to be found. This is just analogy, don't take it literally. Otherwise you may say that, okay, from that zoo I can bring a snake and I can... That is not the idea. No, sometimes people come up with such funny arguments. No, so therefore, just please remember that this is just an analogy. That the appearances, they are never there. That was the idea told earlier, that that which changes was really never there. Not that it was there and then went away. Not that the snake was there earlier when you were having that illusion, and then when you threw light on it, it suddenly went into some hole in the ground. It never was there. It was Triveni, what it was? Always appearance. It never was there. It was there in the form of rope. Rope always is there. The rope never goes away. The snake that was appearing on the rope, that although was being perceived, was really never there. So therefore this word antavanta ime deha, very important word antavanta, that it is their destruction is of this type, that it never was there. It as soon as you examine, it is gone. not like medicine after expiry date is destroyed. It is still there, but you say it is gone now. But earlier it was there, so now it is gone. No. As soon as you examine, that appearance goes away. So, this we have to remember, that this, the bodies, by their very nature, they are just appearances. When the life is centered in body, it is centered in appearance. But what appears like that? What appears? Nityasya. That is imperishable. Nitya. That does not go away any time. That is real. Just as there was the sand which appeared like water. When one sees mirage, it is something, sand or a road, that was there, that appeared as water there. The water was appearance, but something was there. That something we have to find out, and that is called self. That is our very self. That never goes away. That is always there. And so, Sri Krishna points it out, that look, these bodies, ime deha, these bodies, truth is not to be thought about somewhere in the heaven, right here. Right here, see all these bodies with which we get so attached. What are they? They are mere appearances. And what is the reality? The self that pervades through all these and creates these appearances, that alone is a reality. And how is this self then? Anashinaha aprameyasya. Anashin means its very nature is indestructible. There is not that indestructible means it is very hard and you cannot break it with anything. We have yet to find out the equipment to cut something. For metal cutters, they make diamond coated something. The question is then how you cut diamond with. Then you find out something harder than diamond to cut the diamonds. So it is, do you mean to say that the self is such a terribly hard thing that cannot be cut? No, it is not like that. Basically, because it is all pervading, ever existent, so its destruction, the very definition, very idea of its destruction cannot be there. In principle it is indestructible. In principle it always is there. Can you think of, I do not exist? Even that thought is not possible. Swami Vivekananda at one place says that this immortality of the soul is so ingrained in us that even if lorry starts thinking, I am dead, she will be thinking that I am looking at my dead body. So I still am there, the body, dead body, corpse is lying there. Yeah, the death of I is unimaginable also. Even in imagination, you cannot destroy it. Its indestructibility is indestructibility in principle. The bodies, they never are there, they are just appearances. But what appears in the form of these bodies, that is real. And that which is real is always real. That which is unreal, it is unreal even if it appears. So, this is to be felt inside. And then if you ask, How can you prove it? The next word, therefore, is very significant, aprameya, that which cannot be measured. That can not be ever the subject of your intellect. When you intellectually understand, means what is actually happening there, your intellect is measuring it. That which is measurable by intellect can be understood by intellect. Your intellect is kind of limiting that, and then one says that I have understood that. The self cannot be understood like that. It is not measurable by any instrument. It cannot be, therefore, known as an object. Then you may ask this question, then why are we taking the trouble of studying about it when it is not going to be known at all? Why should I come to these classes? Why should I study scriptures? And why should I take notes and all that? The trouble is superfluous. Forget about it if the self can, nobody can know anyway. The ignorant and person of knowledge, no difference then, because the self is not going to be known at all. So why should I worry about that? It is, this question comes, that yes, we study scriptures to know the self, and here it is said that it is unknowable, aprameya, immeasurable, you cannot know it. It is this word, prameya, aprameya. Prameya means that which can be measured, that which can be known, or in other words, that which can be proved. Aprameya is that which can never be in principle proved. But this question is tackled by Shankara in his commentary, that what about then the scriptures giving us the knowledge of the self? Well, friends, scriptures can never give the knowledge of the self, because it is self-revealed. Self cannot be known by any other means, because it is eternal knower. How can the eternal knower be known? For there is a beautiful piece of commentary of Shankara here. Really, very profound truth about this method of proof. And we want to have the proof of everything. Can self be proved? And he says, no, the self is ever existent. Having this understanding first, that I am, then anybody proceeds further to get the proof. To know that I am is essential, is the first step to ask for proof of anything, and therefore self is self-known. Everybody has this awareness of I am. It is intimately known. No means of knowledge are able to know the self, because all of them, they take the stand on this knowledge that I am. I am, and therefore I know. Here Swami Vivekananda had pointed out one mistake that Schopenhauer made in his understanding of Vedanta. He tried to say that Schopenhauer said that I am because I will. That because of my willing, I am. Swamiji told, no, it is not that simple. It is the reverse way. Because I am, so will is possible. Not that will is there and a product of will is I, but I am, and so that will becomes possible because of that. There is no possibility that some other means of knowledge will be able to bring the knowledge of the self. It is the ever self-revealed. It is all the other means proceed later. They take the existence of self for granted and then proceed. It is, you know, howsoever big a scientist is and tries to prove something, well, first takes for granted that I am proving this and this and this. I am observing this from my telescope, and then I find something on the moon, and so I say, yes, I discovered this. I proved that the moon moves in such and such orbit. Yes, that is, you proved that taking for granted first that I am. Every action that we do, even the mental action, is possible only when we stand on this firm ground that I am. This is the basis for all knowledge, and therefore it cannot be known. All our means of knowledge, they just measure the external appearances, not the thing that is inside. As that Kathopanishad says, that what are our means of knowledge doing? Our sense organs, they are all, for all science, the knowledge means what? Catching things in the net of our sense organs. That which can be caught within this net can alone become the subject of all empirical sciences, all material sciences. All sciences take this, whether explicitly or implicitly, for granted, that our sense experience, we try to connect that and call that as knowledge. I have earlier also alluded to that beautiful analogy given by Arthur Eddington, a Greek physicist of last century, a founder of astrophysics. And he said, how do we proceed with our study of science? That we, like a biologist, for example, wanting to study the aquatic creatures, goes and puts a net and finds out what is the catch, examines the catch and says that, well, aquatic creatures can breathe only in water. They die if taken out of water. And second property, he saw that every aquatic creature has to be 2 inches long. After repeated experiments, he found that his first conclusion needs to be modified. Science progresses, isn't it? So the first conclusion has to be replaced by other one. That is what we call progress of science, that he found out that there are some aquatic creatures, like say frog, can survive outside water too. So he modified his first proposition, that there are aquatic creatures which survive outside water too. But his second conclusion remained constant all the time. Every aquatic creature has to be at least 2 inches long, because that was the distance between the two threads of his net. So how can any other creature get caught into it? So our method of knowledge, what we call science, including the science of psychology also, is just like this, that we throw the net of our sense organs and intellect collect the fact whatever are caught in this net and examine them and draw the conclusions on the basis of that. And therefore, that one conclusion remains always the same. And then how can we see the truth that cannot be caught in the senses? It is impossible to catch that truth through howsoever the science, physical science may progress. That is going to remain a mystery for it by its very definition. Not that it is after 1,000 years of progress of science we may be able to... Well, science has been progressing for thousands of years, and yet the gap has remained just the same. It is going to remain just the same. And the sages 5,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago discovered that truth, the same truth each of us can discover by peeping inside, rather than trying to see what is caught. One may get tempted to say, see, I don't care for all that deep truth and all that. I don't have time. Let me be just satisfied by what is caught in the net. Our Vishwanath scientist man, he'll say, hey, Swamiji, this is enough, is it not? Our life is short. After all, how much are we going to learn? Let me concentrate on what I catch and then try to study it. Can we study that also completely? That also we cannot study completely. For example, you catch a fish that you caught 2 inches long. Can you study how was it born? Because at birth it might not be 2 inch long, you see. You can never study even what is caught in the net by limiting yourself to that. And that is why the search for physical science will be never-ending search. And that never-endingness is sometimes eulogized and praised by calling it that it is ever progressive. Ever progressive sounds good, you know, psychologically it is a sweet sounding word. Yes, we progress all the time. What it really means is we never reach the goal. That put in a different way, ever progressing means never reaching, is it not? It is, that is how it is basically. It is not that that some scientist is wrong and the other scientist is better. It is the basic, very defect in the process itself. And therefore Kathopanishad says, Paranchikhani vyatrinat svayambhu tasmat parang pasyati nantaratman. Our sense organs, they have a manufacturing defect that they can see only the changing form, not the thing in itself. They can see only the changing form, that is their manufacturing defect. And therefore, those who want to know the truth, this is where a big difference comes between the just logicians or those who are in the Western sense of the word philosophers. They think, okay, we know that we cannot know the truth through intellect. Like Kant said that X always, that is unknown and unknowable, whatever we know is X plus mind. And therefore, the truth always remains unknowable. So let us remain satisfied with this relative knowledge, form some rules. And there is, he tried then to give a philosophy of practical reason, which was a big failure. Because relative means what? Then my relative and your relative need not be same. and can't try to give a common and yet relative to everybody, which was of course a very highly disputable thing. It is therefore this idea is to be seen that one set of people would just think that okay then since the truth cannot be known through our sense organs and our intellect or whatever means of knowledge that we have, so forget about it. But other set of people would say, no, just as if some of our instruments cannot do some work, that doesn't mean that we give up the work. We find out the instruments through which it can be done. We cannot fly by using our cars, but does that mean that we should not fly at all? We invent aeroplanes and fly with that. Our goals are not decided by what equipments are there. Our goals are our goals. If these equipments cannot give us that, we will find out some other equipment, other means by which we can achieve it. That is where lies, friends, the human glory. It is our goal is our goal. My instruments should not tell me what goal I should have, but instruments are secondary to me. My goal is primary. I will manufacture the instrument that is needed for achieving it. So this is what prompted the search for deeper truth, and that is through meditation, becoming indrawn, to find out the nature of the self itself. Like by repeated experiments of putting the net in water, that fellow would find out that every creature is 2 inches long. Could it not be better, more easily find out by looking at the net itself? You don't need to perform so many experiments. By looking at the net, you know that. So look at the net. Look at the perceiver. Go deeper into it and understand that, yes, the perceiver is the truth, the reality of which all the bodies and all their functions are mere appearances. In that sense, it is told, it is apramaya, beyond knowing. And then let us come back to our original question. Then what do the scriptures do? What do the scriptures do? Scriptures tell us only this, that don't run after the external object. They only show you that these are appearances. And there the job of the scriptures end. The self cannot be product of any scriptural study. Self is existent on its own. The knowledge of the self is ever present with everyone. Last Friday, I think we discussed that. Who does not know that I am? Everyone knows that I am. That knowledge is not to be given by somebody. Everyone has this unflinching conviction that I am. Nobody can live without it. I am. If somebody else is there or not, we have doubts. But I am is an unflinching, ever-present conviction with us. What scriptures do is to tell us to concentrate on this fact that I am and take your attention from appearances. The obsession with appearances is the cause for and not having this knowledge, and when this attention from appearances is shifted, goes to the self, then that is revealed. Therefore, it is said that it is the question of just shifting the attention. That nice analogy is told that a person who required reading glasses, he was reading something and then those glasses are no good for for talking to people, discussing. So, when he was talking to somebody, he just put those on the forehead. And then forgot about them. And after his work was finished, he came out and then came to home. And then started looking for those glasses. He wanted to read something and he thought that he must have dropped them in the workplace. So he again drove back there and looked all the drawers, searched everything and then asked one colleague who was still there, did you see my glasses? Where did I drop them? I don't know. And then that friend said, are you looking for some other pair of glasses or what? No, I have only one pair. Then that is on your forehead. Here, look here, don't look there, you know. Look here, the focus has to be changed, that's all. That you were looking everywhere except in you. So the focus of looking, that what we have lost everywhere. And when you don't find, you know, how frustrated we become in life. That I go seeking joy here, there, everywhere, do not find it. Somewhere I think I am sure to find, I go there, open, don't find it. Then again and again I keep on trying everywhere looking, how can I find it? I am trying to find that where it is not. If you see, right here, it is there. So, the scriptures only tell us that much, that don't waste time and energy in clinging to the objects in our thirst, our quest for happiness. Happiness is with us. It is our right. No? Each of us are by our very nature full of happiness. And the moment we stop the search outside, we get it. That is the only way of getting happiness in the world, friends. That's don't look at the world, look at your very nature. Don't look at the body, but your true nature. And since it cannot be measured by the senses, it is limitless. It has no limitations at all. See, like a body, we can say, well, Triveni is here, Mili is sitting there, Jitendra is sitting there, Chet is sitting here. Now these are the appearances. That therefore you have a location for them. We will say that Triveni is here, she is not in Attleboro right now. That can be told, you know, because it is about the appearance. When she will go back after the class, then we will say that she is in Attleboro and not in Providence right now. But that which has no limitation, that which cannot be conceived by the sense organs. How can you say that it is here and not there? It has no limitation and so it is everywhere. The space is in it, as Plotinus very beautifully puts it, that the soul is not in space, but the space is in soul. The space is in us, we not in space. Bodies, they have this characteristic of space and time. But We are not in space. Space is a product of our mind, that's all. So therefore, this is beyond all limitation. And anashinah aprameyasya tasmad yudhyasva bharata. And therefore he says, so you should fight. And you should fight here again. Shankaracharya says that it is not a directive. This is a very nice place here where a lot of people say, why? He is telling, what connection does it have that it is, this self is indestructible, self is ever present, self is beyond all knowledge, and so you fight. As if what logical connection is there, how he is saying that so you fight? It is said that tasmat means therefore, tasmat means therefore, therefore Arjuna you fight. Why is a logical connection made there, that the bodies are appearances, and the self is imperishable, self is beyond all possibility of knowledge, and so, Arjuna, you fight. And what is then so? What is the idea of putting a causal connection between these two? Shankara explains here, many commentators have explained in the same way here, that Arjuna is not being told to fight. Not that you go and fight. Arjuna was going to do that itself. Arjuna had come just a few minutes ago, or maybe about half an hour ago, to fight. So he had the problem that because of this killing idea of killing and all that, he wanted to get away from fighting. So therefore he is told, you do what you were about to do, don't get distracted from that. Not that everybody has to fight, this advice is not like that, so let us all take these swords or bow and arrow and go to fight, because Bhagavad Gita has told us to fight. This is not the injunction of Bhagavad Gita, this is not a dictum of Bhagavad Gita, that everybody who is the follower of Krishna must take up the arm and start fighting. That is not told anywhere. It is told to Arjuna, you had started you came here with the idea of fighting. So, for the reason that you thought that you will be killing these people and the bodies are permanent and you got attached to the bodies, so only this delusion Krishna is trying to remove, that's all. He is not directing Arjuna per se to fight. So, then he tells Arjuna, Veda vinashinam nityam yaenam ajam avyayam katham sapurusha partha kam ghatayati hantikam. That the one who knows Veda, who knows that the self is immortal and is ever present, that which cannot be destroyed and that which is ever present, the one who knows this, how can that person trouble anybody or kill anybody? There is no possibility of doing it. This idea will not be there that I kill so and so, because knows that it can't be killed. The body, yes, can be hit, but the self cannot be. This, of course, should not be taken as the argument, some people can take this, that so, I can kill anybody after all and give this argument, after all who gets killed, the self is not, cannot be killed. And there is no killing of the body. Killing of the body again has no meaning, you know, what is the killing of the body again? And the body as such, even if a person dies, the body is there. And do you say that if you shoot it again, will you be killing the body? Matter cannot be killed, and the self is eternal, immortal, cannot be killed. So what really gets killed? What really gets killed? The matter, killing of matter has no meaning at all. This word doesn't connote anything. And can you say that I killed a piece of metal? There is no such idea would arise, you know. You can't say that I killed a log of wood or a... It is matter cannot be killed. And self is beyond killing, immortal. So what really then gets killed? This is a question to ponder over, you know. What gets killed? Any answers? Any thoughts about it? What really gets killed? Sometimes I should be also allowed to ask you questions, is it not?
The life force gets divorced from the matter. It's no longer animated. Take a tree. When the life force goes out of it, it stays a dead tree.
Right, right. Yes. So what is this life force? What is this life force? You say life force goes away and so we kill it. Is life force matter or the self?
It's the derivative of consciousness.
What he says is correct, that but what it is difficult again to specify. This puzzling of everybody is right there, not only even at the highest level of this medical science and bioethics, this question is topmost, that what should really be called dying of a person? What happens when a person dies and how to determine exactly that a person is dead? Especially this problem has become more and more pronounced when so many these experiences of near-death experiences have come. The people who were declared clinically dead, they have again sprang into life. So they were declared dead clinically after taking all those examinations, EKG and EEG and whatever, those A to Z, whatever you combinations you can make, all those tests were performed on them, and yet that was revealed that the person is dead. And after a while, the person came to life. And they have narrated their experiences. There was a time when there was the tendency to just say that they are just hoax, they are not real. But the accumulating data, it is a big body of data that cannot be just poo-pooed like that. There are many such, and many of them have lived a long life after that. So, it is a question really, what should be called the conclusive proof that a person has died. So, not only that we are puzzled, Chet is not, he has studied scriptures, he is a very intelligent person, he has studied science a lot, and yet he feels puzzled, shows that how deep the question really is. Not easy to answer what really happens when somebody dies. It is like the matter cannot be called dead, it is always dead. And the self can never die. So who dies really? Who dies? Yes, George? Well, the appearance dies. What is death of an appearance again? Yeah, you can never die. Yes, you are never born. The self is never born, so can never die. Yes. Yes, Rishali, what dies?
The association between the soul and the matter.
Oh, yeah. That is very close. Very that this ignorance goes away. This ignorance that I am so and so, and that gets shifted to something else, and that we cause say that it is dead. We shall have the occasion to discuss this threadbare in a few verses to come, that what happens when a person dies, and there comes also the very interesting, very enigmatic idea of this soul taking body after body, rebirth. So, this is nowhere in no other book you will find this explained so beautifully as is in Bhagavad Gita. In fact, all very beautiful philosophical works explaining reincarnation really seem to rest on the analogies and the explanations given in Bhagavad Gita. And we shall be in classes to come, some couple of classes to come, we shall study it here. So, any more questions? Yes, George? Yeah. So that is what the scriptures do. And how the scriptures give you the knowledge of the self is by removing the misidentification.
Right.
Yeah. Why you say it is hard to do? But it is harder to, you know, to identify I with body, is it not? It is still harder. How can I be the body? Therefore, our language has this dilemma, our behavior has this dilemma. I never say I knows. My nose means again, I am separate from the nose. My eye, I am separate from the eye. So, apply this to every part of the body. My heart. And all these are subject to transplantations, you know. Even heart can be changed, you know. Of course, people have change of heart in a different sense also. But the really biological heart can be taken and changed. One doctor in India, in Assam, he did this innovative. Of course, he was, because of the laws, he was put into prison for doing that thing. That small boy was brought to him, and he had that heart problem, such a problem that it could not be fixed. He told the parents and all that, I will try transplanting a pig's heart there, because pig's heart is not good to hear. We don't feel like to hear that. But pig's heart is similar, very similar to human heart. So he said, I will put a pig's heart there. And I don't know if anyway the child is not likely to survive. If I do this, gives him a little chance. So are you ready for that? And the parents said yes, because otherwise he is not going to survive anyway. And then he performed that surgery. And then after that the child survived for a few days with pig's heart, you know. What was pulsating inside was pig's heart. So in principle that is possible, that you can replace heart. You can replace every part in the body. So are you body then? You are not body. Just as you have shirt, you don't say that, well, my shirt, just as we say my shirt, similarly you say my body. I am not that. So is it not very difficult to identify with body? And still we do it. So this is an easy thing, you know, not to identify with body. Why are we interested in doing difficult work and not an easy work? Easy work, I am not body. Yes, Charles?
But if you replace the brain, you'd be someone else, right?
No. Actually, that is the final test, you know. Because right now, the physical scientists, they are pinning hope on this, that if the brain is replaced, brain is not replaceable. But actually brain is cut. A half part of the brain has, there are many surgeries like that. That they surgically, they, just as they, any limb, suppose that limb has to be amputated for, because it is infected, so to prevent the sufferings and to prevent the infection from going deeper, you amputate that part. And after the patient becomes all right. So it is possible to amputate a part of the brain. Many such surgeries are performed routinely. And you don't say then that now the person is only half of that. Half of the person has been now thrown in the garbage. It is not like that. Even if there is no such thing done, but it is possible that the brain, in fact, on other front, this experiment is going on at a very brisk pace, that to create artificial brain, instead of depending on a biologically made brain and putting replacing that, let us see what functions of brain can be simulated by us. And many, like the eyes, the vision, can be simulated. Those who have that vision problems, some time back I read an article on that it is possible to gain the lost vision back through putting that particular part, that electronic brain into you, which will create the sensation of vision in you. So it is, there are many such things going on, and maybe that tomorrow, just as about the other parts of the body, even the brain can be replaced. And then who are you?
Yes.
Yes. No, no, they again can be separated. It is a little more intimately connected than the body and the brain. Mind is a little more intimately connected, but it is still separable. I am not the mind too. And just as I am not body, I am not the mind either. In Vedanta, we usually try to present it like this in the modern language, to put in the modern language. It is neither hardware nor software. Mind is akin to the software. It is... I changed my mind. So it is, mind also is changeable. It is one friend of mine, we were going in the plane and the attendant asked, what would you like to drink? And he said, I don't want anything. I asked for an orange juice. And then after he saw that I am taking orange juice, he said, okay, I will also take orange juice. And he asked her, can I change my mind? It is after all my mind, so I think I can change, is it not? And so he got also. So my mind is again my, you know, it changes again. So there is somebody who is user of the mind, perceiver of the mind. Just as you can perceive the external objects, you can also perceive the thoughts in your mind. So mind also is not you. You are, again, mind has variations. Mind, my mind and your mind need not be same, you know, otherwise it would be a big problem. If everybody has this, just as if everybody has the same body, it would be different, a difficult thing. If everybody has the same mind, well, our minds are not same, but the self is same in everyone. In everything, the self is the same. So, mind also is not I. But that we will discuss then, where does the mind fit into this? That will come later, after a couple of more verses. We shall examine that while examining how the different bodies are taken. Today I think we have exceeded the time limit. So let us conclude by the closing prayers.
Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvinasrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantraha Tasya Namani Yani Karma Pyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.